something I wanted to talk about was really what is the path? I mean, when talking about being perfect or seeking perfection or wholeness on the path, but you know, the question is, what is the Buddhist path as understood within the Tibetan tradition of what is the path? So we practice with images of bodhisattvas like Green Tara or Shakyamuni. And this kind of practice, which is usually called tantric practice or Vajrayana practice, exists within a certain kind of view of what is the path and what is a person. And the way this is usually communicated, at least to us, the way it's been communicated by our teachers, but I know that this is in the traditional way of teaching, is that the practice of this kind of meditation is taking death, the intermediate state, and rebirth into the path. This is the way they say this, which is practicing meditation means taking the experiences of death, rebirth, and the stage between death and rebirth, which is the bardo, that might be a word you're familiar with, into the path, which is to say that it becomes the path, which sounds pretty weird when you first hear it. I mean, how do you take death as the path? How do you take the bardo state as the path? How do you take rebirth as the path? Especially because you might not even believe in rebirth, because most Westerners don't. So then it becomes a question of how can this be the path? And in that sense, how can you say that this is the foundation of what I'm doing when I'm meditating, especially if I don't even believe in rebirth, which many Americans don't. I mean, it's sort of an established notion in the Buddhist world. So I wanted to talk about that briefly, and then I think I'll probably come back to that in 2 weeks because we don't have enough time to talk about it in any depth right now. But as the teaser or the cliffhanger, if you will, on this particular issue, the reason it's possible to do this is because in the 24-hour cycle, we experience a similitude, as the Tibetans say, a similitude of death in between stage or bardo and rebirth, which is falling asleep into dreamless sleep is similar to death in the sense that it's a state of unicity and therefore non-multiplicity, and therefore it's a state of, for us, unconsciousness, that we're just not aware of anything in dreamless sleep because there's no dualistic mind functioning. There's no subject and object. So that's something that happens to us. Similitude of death happens to us every night. And the bardo state is like the dream state, and that happens to us every night. And this is a state, as traditionally described, where your external physical sense organs aren't operating particularly well, but a quality of your mind is functioning. The internal mental sense is functioning. And so these scenarios are woven together out of elements of memory and some degree of sensing the environment. You know, like if you're wrapped up in your blanket, is the classic example out of psychology, you might feel like you're being tied up or some drama occurs as a result of being constrained because your legs are wrapped up in the blanket. So you don't exactly feel it, but it does have an impact on you. And then rebirth, what's called rebirth, is coming into rational waking consciousness when we wake up in the morning. So actually in the 24-hour cycle, we go through this process of dualistic consciousness, which is oriented toward external physical senses. Then we fall into a dreamless sleep when we fall asleep, which is like dying, because there's no separation of subject and object. And therefore, for us, there's no awareness because we don't have the skill to be aware outside of the subject-object distinction, although it's possible to achieve this. Then we have dreams, which is like the bardo state, and all this stuff happens, and it seems to happen outside of our control. I mean, there are people who have lucid dreams, by the way. And it is possible to develop the ability to sort of lucidly dream between lives, according to the Tibetans. But for most of us, we're victims of our own mental dramas when we're having dreams, good, bad, or indifferent. We could be having wonderful dreams, and we're the victims of great joys and pleasures. More often than not, we have really confusing, strange things happening, and we're sort of the victims, to use that language, of those confusing, strange things. And then we wake up into ordinary, rational consciousness. And so we go through that cycle. So it's actually possible to take the elements of those experiences into the meditation path and practice on that basis. So meditation on images, like meditation on the image of green Tara, is essentially developing a skill of putting yourself into a state of mind which is like a dreamlike state. So you can have a conscious waking dream, but you're not a victim of some process happening. You're consciously, intentionally imagining yourself in that space with certain characteristics, such as being a green woman who loves the world and is not afraid of everything, or anything rather, or something like that. So, and then there's an outcome that happens from these kinds of practices. And the other thing I'll mention before I forget it, there are practices which are more rationally based and analytically based, which are like what are associated with rebirth. So sort of the analytic understanding of the nature of emptiness or interdependence would be an example of that kind of level of analysis of understanding or practice. So those three qualities of deep sleep, which is a unitary state of consciousness, a non-dualistic state of consciousness, are things that we can practice with. Sort of the dreamlike state, when we practice with images, and when Kay does a guided meditation, there's a way in which we're developing that kind of consciousness. Then the rational consciousness of wake is something that we can work with also. And they're all folded into the path, because the Buddhist path is whole and not just perfect. And whole means incorporating in the path the whole of ourselves. And the whole of ourselves are our dreaming mind, our rational mind, and that mind which we don't understand very well because it's non-dualistic. We, I think, sometimes experience it in waking consciousness, like when we're if we're athletic and we're in the zone, as they say, we're completely one with what we're doing, and we have a state of consciousness which is we're aware, but it's not exactly dualistic. I don't exactly know how to describe it. Sometimes I'm on the elliptical walker. I get into it. There's a certain point where my metabolism has changed and my I don't know what's going on, and I'm moving in a certain way, and suddenly it's kind of like click. I'm into this other space, which is very, very different, you know. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it's quite nice. And then I recognize that that's what it is. But that's not exactly what Buddhists mean, but it gives you sort of an idea. Yeah, sort of it points in that direction. Because how could we ever talk about what it really means? Because as soon as we're talking about it, we're using dualistic language, and therefore that language is going to be incapable of really communicating what that state of awareness is. So I'm going to come back to this. Yes, I'm going to come back to this in 2 weeks and address it a little bit more systematically, and also talk about it in relationship to the guru, the Lama, because a couple weeks after that, most of us will be meeting up with the real guru, the real Lama, the real Bodhisattva, because the Dalai Lama really is, from my point of view, all of the above. Okay, what were you going to say?
So you're saying tantric practice, or the visualization and so forth, in regards to the dream state, and analytical and so forth in regards to the waking state. So what about, what Buddhist practice has to do with the non-dual?
Zen.
Or Mahamudra.
Or Mahamudra. Yeah, when you can sit still and you've constrained the rational process to the point that you have non-conceptual awareness, actual non-conceptual awareness of what's going on, that's like the state of death. It's described as clear light of death is the term that's typically used. But it's direct non-conceptual experience without the distinction of subject and object. So that's the key thing. The distinction of subject and object isn't there. So it's a little hard to describe what that is. It's actually very hard to describe what that is. But those are the three. Those are the three. And the ability to move through those three then would be the goal of the perfect person who's also whole, who can move at will through those three. In fact, be in those three at the same time. The definition of a Buddha is somebody who, in one instance of awareness, is aware of multiplicity and unity at the same time. It's typically described as aware of the absolute truth and the relative truth, which I don't want to get into what those things mean right now. But a shorthand would be to say that a Buddha is somebody who's aware of unity and multiplicity at the same time, and they don't conflict with each other. For us, they'd be in complete conflict, right? Because when our minds are capable of understanding multiplicity, we don't get the unity side of things. I mean, intellectually we might, but I'm talking about experientially. You know, because when experience is that of subject and object, we don't have a sense of unity. We think of unity as subject-object distinction is gone. So how can those two things coexist? Well, we can't understand that rationally. But it's actually possible to experience it if you're a Buddha. That was a rambling talk. I don't think I'm going to...